Paul, and all of you for coming. I did read on the web, since Susan's book was published, that Stephen Fry is actually allergic to champagne, which is something of a pity, I thought, but there we go. Well, I thought it was we should use the publicity that could be gained from that. Anyway, it's on the book. But enough. The first poem I'll read is a light enough poem. I write a lot of poems that people think are a bit mean. And I thought that this one was coded well enough. There were no, items of clothing identifying the person, but a woman came up to me and said, "That's disgraceful what you wrote about my friend." And I thought, but this is, she was right, but I obviously must be spot on. And it's called Bookshop Romance, and it's about, I don't know if you get this in court, but we get a lot of it in Golden. The type of fellow who hangs around the bookshop, this may or may not be Charlie Burns, on Little Street in Galway, pretending to be fascinated. Bookshop Romance. The girl behind the counter whispers, "Yes, mother," then puts the phone down with a cosmic sigh. You look up from your D.H. Lawrence. Something rustled in your corduroy trousers. You want to shout, "Let me through, I'm an existentialist." To take her hand and tell her your own family Christmases often resemble the aftermath of an embalming. That your brother's a fully paid up member of V-neck sweaters for the bomb. But most years you honour them with your absence. That you'd like her to come up this evening to see your haiku and the life you keep in the shoebox under the bed. That you've been admired by women with bad judgment all your life. This is a new poem. All the other poems I'll read are from Tiny New Furniture. The local papers in Galway play a significant role in, a not insignificant role in, which is referred to in the poem, role in day-to-day life. And we have three or four compulsive writers of letters to the editor. And we were in none of them are poets, of course. Myself and Susan were in doing a talk to the MA in writing students 3 years ago, and John Kenny, who teaches on that program, said, "Surely you could write a poem about these people." And but anyway, something snapped during the summer, and I said, "Right, here we go." Dear editor, it is not insignificant. Your archives prove, before God had the balls to put pen to paper, I was on record both for and against bank bailout, global jihad, secret world government, the transport of the Jews to the East, and the attempt by the city council to quietly replace, not replace, the shrubs on the green opposite. It is not insignificant. I won't name them here, but we both know of whom I speak. Dear editor, no one gives a damn what's become of the coastal towns, or bothers anymore to listen to the traditional Irish harp. Dear editor, is it just me? You are what I do nights when I can't phone radio stations to violently disagree with what I said last week about too many, not enough, American, French, Brazilian flags on buildings that are none of my business, or women weeing in all-night doorways. We both know of whom I speak. Dear editor, I am not insignificant. I have written to the relevant authorities, but only when you say my name can I be sure I still exist." I'll read the no comments at all until that might refer to on YouTube, especially. This is the first poem in the book, and it was inspired by, on my 40th birthday, which is not all that long ago, but my sister got me a copy of the Guardian newspaper, because I was born in London, from that date. And the poem is kind of a found poem that emerged from what was going on that day. Thursday, April the 6th, 1967. The clock nudges three. Soon the sun will move across the day's news. For now it lies in wait for me. Unopened bundles outside the corner shops of North London. Decline in Soviet research efficiency. Yesterday, New Orleans businessman Clay Shaw pleaded not guilty to conspiracy to murder John F. Kennedy. Che Guevara has visited Bolivia twice recently and is expected back soon. Chelsea seek revenge on Sheffield Wednesday. West Berlin police detain 11 students for plotting to kill US Vice President Hubert Humphrey. In the Guardian crossword, down 21 is four letters for a seaweed found in East Anglia. Today's weather, sunny intervals, scattered showers, winds moderate or fresh, locally strong, 10 degrees centigrade. I kick my legs oblivious to the politics and weather outside this big white place I've landed in. Tonight I'll miss Engelbert Humperdinck sing Please Release Me on Top of the Pops, and the ministerial broadcast by Mr. Richard Crossman, leader of the House of Commons, but I don't care. I'm too busy sniffing the air and don't like the look of things here. The room fierce with light, a trolley rattling down the corridor telling me things I don't want to hear. This next poem is provoked by being the writer in residence at Merlin Park Hospital, and my mom was very ill in 1977, but thankfully survived. And she was in that hospital, and it reminded me that there is nothing like I think Merlin Park was a TB hospital, so it's all these units separated out. It always reminds me of that concentration camp. Because it's on the edge of town, surrounded by trees. There's a big kind of chimney there as well. And on a wet day in November or December or January or February, there is something dark about it. This is kind of a memory that that brought back. St. Stephen's Day, 1977, for my mother. Yesterday, in my new football boots, I moved like Kevin Keegan through the silver afternoon. Today, Mullet Kintyre is number one, and the film director, Howard Hawks, is dead. I take my football boots off, and myself again. You're still a skeleton with all-day night sweats. The doctor, who knows the why of everything but this, has given you back for Christmas. Most of the turkey goes leathery in the fridge. Dad puts the telephone down, tells me to extinguish the TV. The doctor wants you back three days early. Our Ford Cortina cradles you through late afternoon streets, all those lit windows and reeds, but we don't see them. And nothing is said as we deposit you at Unit 7, Merlin Park Hospital. You at the door giving a small pale wave. In the near distance, the disused boiler's giant chimney stack, the rain saying terrible things as we drive off. That Christmas, you didn't die. Susan mentioned that every poet has to have their recession poem. I have a whole section in the book, the first of which was this poem. And myself and a friend of mine had a joke that when everything collapsed, we didn't quite think it would collapse as spectacularly as it has, that everything that was crap about the 1980s in Ireland, and there was a lot, would be gradually bit by bit reinstated. I wrote this on the June bank holiday weekend in 2008, and the following week, the ESRI, or whoever they are, announced that officially Ireland now was in the session for the first time since 1982, so that was convenient. ourselves again. In the park, our eyes lollies fall victim to the June bank holiday heat, while in glass rooms, numbers moving through dark computers declare the future finished. Tomorrow, we'll have our double glazing taken out, a crack put back in the ceiling, and a draft installed under every door. I'll attach a for sale sign to the seat of my pants. Gangs of the angry unemployed will bear down on the G Hotel, chanting, "Down with daiquiris and slippery nipples. Give us back our glasses of harm." In pubs nationwide, the carpets of yesteryear will be reinstated. And there'll be meetings, the Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party, going on permanently upstairs. On our knees we'll ask for the unforgiveness of sins and life not lasting. We'll be ourselves again, and then some. Kind of post all of that. This is a poem called "That Was My Country," and that's a Caroline Duffy who had a poem in the 1980s called "This Is My Country, Welcome to My Country." It's sort of a nostalgia for the collapsed age that's just gone, but it's also partly by the same friend who said, "Yeah, they're going to put the cracks back in the ceiling." We were having a chat, and he said, "How long will it be before the apparitions start, or statues start to move?" Because that was one of the high points of 1985 and 1986. And then I think Jesus appeared in a tree or something.
Yeah.
It may have been in this, kind of closer to here than on the way down from Galway to here. But anyway, that was my country, after Caroline Duffy. The fading out of stone walls and saints, the statues not daring to move, where there was planning permission for anything, and morning was breakfast baps and gravel going back that road by the truckload, where transparency meant the skirts just kept getting shorter. We so believed in sunshine. On rain-swept days, we carry sunglasses on top of our heads, just in case. Wherever we wanted to go, Ryanair would get us almost there. And the world was not our problem. We still have butter on our rich tea biscuits for now, but no more coconut creams. And everywhere, statues of virgins and freedom fighters think about stretching their legs. Earlier this year, or actually end of 2008, we looked into the forward of the new teaching semester, and okay, creative writing exercises, what could I give them, kind of first class in GTI, beginner's creative writing. Came up with this poem called "House Guest" by Elizabeth Bishop, which was simply titled "House Guest." It was about a very annoying aunt who had come to stay with her for months, and sat knitting on the couch. And I thought, okay, it's Christmas. People may have had annoying visitors. That's just possible. And so I brought that poem in, and then I thought, well, could I write this myself? And I couldn't think of anyone, but then I thought, well, if you turned around, I could be the house guest. And this is, I wasn't this bad, but this was 20 years ago. House guest after Elizabeth Bishop. For 18 months he's been staying until the end of next week. Harder to pin down on any calendar than the precise date of his world uprising of the workers, which he writes down for you nightly on that day's anti-Potax leaflet. All the first week of January, fried slices of the Christmas pudding his mother sent him in the post, or breakfast, lunch and dinner. Work for the laundrette would get in the way of his plans for the planet. Your one-bedroom flat is starting to smell. We're not away on a demo chanting victory to Iraq. His afternoons are spent doing despicable things to worse women in your bed. The pile of 20 pence pieces on your bedside locker diminishes daily. Yesterday, he was rushed to hospital to have the wife auntie's warrant for the past 6 months surgically removed. Today, he's what emerges from your living room sofa bed to tell you where you're going wrong. This is the other side of that. Getting somewhere. Turning 42. We actually had my 42nd birthday party in the G Hotel. The one that there were no crowds chanting outside then. Getting somewhere. turning 42 is like passing through Port Arlington on the train. I will get somewhere eventually.
Yeah. Okay.
Today's paper says the everything that was mine to win is now the something I have to lose. My daydreams busy with clocks and budgets. I'm a man destined to turn up early for my own funeral. Spend the morning redoing my tie and wondering where the hell everyone else has got to. Okay, just three more. This one contains the title of the book, Frightening New Furniture. And in my great tradition of genuine, dreadful timing, there's a kind of an ironic, jokey reference to the idea of nationalising the banks as a completely irrelevant and outdated thing. It was written in June 2007. 2 months later, the credit crunch started and loads of them are now nationalised. I became a socialist in 1982 at the beginning of Thatcher's reign, which went on for years and years. So you don't want me to sign your petition ever because you will lose. And this is called Clear Out. Today it all goes to the dumpster, my old political furniture. The broken bookcase called Nationalisation of the Banks. The three-legged dining chair called Critical Support for the PLO. The fringe pink lampshade called Theory of the Permanent Revolution. The collapsed sofa bed called Excuses We Made for Robert Mugabe. The retired toilet seat called the Trade Union Movement. And the man who spent 25 years sitting on it at 3:36 p.m. in the stripped living room, I forget him. As of now, he never existed. I'm too busy watching the delivery man unload frightening new furniture from that van pulled up outside. Yeah, I have a Corona. Is that okay?
Yeah.
This is called Hero. And it's kind of, it explains itself. Hero, the day you fall bawling into the world in a village northeast of Salisbury, in faraway Florida, Sydney Potier is busy being one day old. In Moscow, heavily scarred women mark the anniversary. Lenin, 1 month dead today. Your two older brothers soon join him, and your father, Gabriel Starfers, you are 10 years old. It is 1934, and all's down to you. Mission schools, then university. You are a teacher. Your only son dies of cerebral malaria. For subversive speech, you are under arrest. 10 years, you study law. The party chooses you. Rocket launchers and Chairman Mao, you look in the mirror one morning and see His Excellency, Comrade President, your name on the lips of a continent. In the final act, you start gifting farms the white man stole to your friends, one for everyone in the audience. As the supermarket shelves empty, your life fills up with dead people. The country may be living on styrofoam and grass, but we'll sing your name one last time. The air fat with laughter as you step into the TV to say, we don't cheat, but on the other side, all sorts of irregularities. A foreign journalist is arrested on the 10th floor of a hotel near the airport. Silence, but for the sound of an occasional dog barking on Samora Michelle Avenue. Outside your office, the sign, Mugabe is right. It is 2008. And all down to you. Okay, and finally, myself and Susan were on a reading in Athens in December of 2008, which was a real sense of things, being at the end of one era and the beginning of another. One of the readings was cancelled because the students were revolting. That was actually, it was like something like the 1960s in the US. But they published a small anthology of translations of themselves, Susan and Patrick Chapman, who's a silent poet from Dublin, and three Greek poets sent into English as well. And one of the translators was there, a little fella who wore huge jumpers at all times, and he would push the wife around when they were outside in a little wheelchair and she could walk, but she clearly ran things, shall we say, and they were getting on. But they'd say things like, people used to, I remember we were going into the embassy at one stage, the Irish embassy, and it was downhill and you lost, you got away from them. But then they'd come back in the evening and say, tomorrow we must go hill walking, wouldn't that be nice? Yes, jolly good. And you think, how will that work? But then I looked at them and thought, well, there are much, much worse ways of ending up. And this is kind of putting us in their position, perhaps, in the future. Together in the future tense. On a day that for now sits unopened under the tree, you'll push me uphill in a wheelchair. Say things like, Augustus John, as you'll know, was obsessed with motor cars. And think, people know what you mean. Every other Wednesday, we'll take the wrong medication. You, mine, and I, yours. And the results will be magnificent. I'll be forever answering the question before last. In our thoughts, we'll commit grotesque typographical errors. For Athens, read Athenry. For Raljax, read Caniston. For disabled toilet, read World Weightlifting Championships. For Swan Lake, read Loch Ray. The once absolute monarchy of my brain will grant autonomy to my bits. Our bladders will be busy writing their declarations of independence. We'll be our very own festival of befuddlement as the light on the Aegean Sea becomes a small boy taking his bowl home for the evening and the stray dogs wander off. Thanks very much.